What is the first thing that you would drop for women in their 40s to know about heart health?
Your risk is not really lower than men. Hypertension is actually more common in older women than it is in older men. Diet, like a bit of a pescatarian diet, so to speak, it's very hard for Singaporeans and Asians to do. You need about 150 minutes a week of moderate intensity exercise to pass. If your heart's healthy, but you fall down when you're going down a flight of stairs, it's still not great. Everybody was just no carbs. Every girl wanted to be tiny and little. You can be strong, and being strong is great.
Hey, hey, and welcome to the 40s Formula, your go-to place for insightful discussions on navigating the 40s and thriving in this transformative decade.
We're your hosts, Jasmine and Amanda, two women that are passionate about exploring the challenges and adventures that come with turning 40 and what lies ahead.
Dr. Jean Ong is a cardiologist at the National University Heart Center Singapore and Ng Teng Fung General Hospital. She has clinical interests in women's heart health, heart failure, cardiac imaging, and cardiac rehabilitation. She is passionate about spreading awareness on heart disease in women. When she's not working, Jean can be found throwing around a barbell in the gym or chasing after her border collie. All opinions expressed in the following episode are her own and do not represent any hospital, institution, or constitute any medical advice. All right, well, guys, you know that I'm about to go full fangirl today with the guests that I have been waiting to talk to you for the past few weeks, who I've been calling the CrossFit cardiologist. She didn't coin it, but I'll take it. She's both a consultant for the National University Heart Center here in Singapore and a competitive CrossFit athlete. So in other words, she's a total baddie in all walks of life. Welcome, Dr. Jean.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we are super happy to have you here, as you know.
Oh, yeah. Amanda has been going on and on about this episode.
I'm so flattered.
But so what is the first thing that you would drop for women in their 40s to know about heart health?
That's such a difficult question. I want them to know everything.
Yes, I want them to too.
I think the most important thing that I would advocate for people to know is that your risk is not really lower than men. Your lifetime risk is not lower than men. A lot of women think heart disease is a men's disease and they don't consider it to be something that they will have to worry about in their lifetime. But because we kind of live longer than they do, we tend to experience heart diseases at a much older age, it's more complicated. So that's kind of like the first thing I do want people to know.
First thing is beware, it's going to get you in the end.
At some point.
Yeah, but no, you're right. I operated under that misunderstanding before that it's like, oh, you know, men die of heart attacks, women die of XYZ, right? But it's like, no, we just die of older heart attacks.
In a way, yeah, very much so.
So to that end, right, I found a YouTube video where you're talking about the shocking fact that women die of heart failure at higher rates than men. Can you can you explain that? So heart disease, heart failure, like what are the distinctions?
So usually when people say heart disease, they're talking about blockages in your heart arteries. So that's a very long word for it is atherosclerotic coronary artery disease, which in and of itself is more a male disease. But when we talk about heart failure, that's kind of the end point of all heart disease. If you don't treat heart disease well, your heart gets weak or you're unable to pump effectively, and that's heart failure. Okay. The sad thing about heart failure is there's a few different types. There's one where your heart is stiff and this one that where your heart's weak. Women get the stiff heart one more common. So the function of the heart by right is normal.
Okay.
But you're not filling your heart as much with as much blood. So you're still not getting enough blood to the rest of your body. That's one. So we get that. And honestly, the treatment for that type of heart failure is very complicated. It's very complex. And only in the past maybe 5-10 years do we actually have, you know, guideline-directed medication for that. First, for the weak heart, surprisingly as well, that is kind of more common in men, but women are still less likely to get, you know, all the medication required. So the chances of women dying from after a heart attack from heart failure actually higher than men.
Oh, so okay. So that's where that kind of number comes up.
There's a lot of like little nuances to it, but there are numbers in various aspects to show that women overall, after they get diagnosed with heart disease, they do way worse than men do.
What would you say are the biggest driving factors that cause heart disease or heart failure in women? You know, is it something that we're eating? Is it something we're doing or not doing? What would you say?
So it's very different in different parts of the world as well. I think here, but one of the most common things that has come up is actually hypertension. So hypertension is actually more common in older women than it is in older men. It's also less likely to be treated well.
When you say less likely to be treated well, what do you mean?
So women get less medicine, get less medicated for it. They are on lower doses of medications.
Is there a reason?
Yeah, why is that?
I mean, there's been many people who've looked into this, you know, many studies out there, but it's just multifactorial. Women don't like medicine. Mm. We also don't feel that we should be taking it. We all prefer to take supplements over medicine.
Well, you're talking to two nutritionists. Believe me, we know people do not want to take medicine. Yeah. They'll take whatever unregulated supplement.
They will take some oil and powders and whatever, but they're not going to take their medication.
Yeah.
Also, you know, if you see a little old lady or a small little lady come in and her blood pressure is a bit high and she goes, I'm a bit nervous. You're like, it's okay.
White coat. You're fine.
It's white coat. Yeah. You're anxious. Yeah. Go home and relax and you're fine. So I think there's a lot of little nuances to it, but it's still something we're trying to figure out how to get over as well.
Okay. Let me tell you this. This is an honest example of myself. I'm just going to cut the shit. I am a woman in my 40s, early 40s, always been active, always been athletic, never been overweight, no risk factors.
Except
that I do have a father with high blood pressure who is medicated, right? So medicated, normal blood pressure, but unmedicated high. Mm. I've never been medicated. My blood pressure is always high normal. Mm-hmm. So if 120 over 80 is like, you know, normal, I'm always like 130 over 85. Mm-hmm. For someone like me, what would you recommend?
So by and large right now, it's still a lot of, you know, lifestyle modification at this point in time, because also, we also don't want to medicate people for long periods of time if they don't need to.
Yeah.
So by and large, I think, if I'm not wrong, the American guidelines do just state to modify your risk factors. Mm-hmm. But there is a whole train of thought of people who are aiming for blood pressures of under 120 for everyone.
Yeah.
And I think that becomes a very personal choice as to whether or not, you know, does your dad just have high blood pressure or does he have complications of high blood pressure? And if he has all these complications, do you then want to take measures earlier to prevent yourself from getting those complications?
Yeah.
But if he just has fairly well controlled high blood pressure, you know, you're fairly healthy, you're doing what you're doing everything you should be doing, then what more is there to do really at this point?
I guess that's true. Yeah. And hey, I'm going to give my dad a shout out here. My dad is 76 years old, about to be 76 years old, and he runs a 5K every other day.
Wow.
So either three or four times per week, depending.
Better than
so,
I do.
Yeah, so no, my husband is always like, your dad's the healthiest old dude ever. Like his one little blood pressure med is no big deal. But again, because I have it, I'm like, why?
So does the hypertension or risk of hypertension change or vary depending on like your ethnicity or your background? So for example, would somebody who is of American descent have generally a better blood pressure than someone who's, let's say, of Indian descent, or someone who's Indian living in England?
Another hypothetical. Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, because, you know, if 120 over 80 is the ideal, is it really the ideal, or would that change based on, you know, who you are, where you're from, what you do?
There's a little bit of variance in who you are, where you're from. but I think in all populations, there are people who are at higher risk and there are people who are at average risk and things like that. I mean, obviously, I know the Asian statistics or the Singapore statistics better because most of my practice has been here.
Yeah.
But I do think that in America, the Blacks and Hispanics, they do have higher risks. Mm. South Asians, wherever you live, unfortunately, you have higher risk. I'm so sorry to tell you.
I know this. Like the Indian gene.
Yeah, first we found out it was bad to be married, remember? And now we find out it's bad to be South Asian. Sorry, gal.
But that ethnicity doesn't necessarily contribute to your blood pressure being higher. It just means that if you do have high blood pressure, maybe you want to be more aggressive with treating
it. I've actually got hypotension.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you pass out?
I've never passed out. Mm-hmm. So actually, whenever I've gone to get checked, I've always, I'm like low average. But I've never passed out. And when I have my DNA thing done, it says I am at risk of hypo. Mm. But I think because I work out and I do, you know, I eat plenty of salt, you know, I'm fine.
She's salty.
That's okay for now, I think.
Yeah. Like how hypo is problematic.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays we know a lot of women who have POTS.
What's POTS?
It's postural orthostatic tachycardia. So very long.
Yes, I've heard the full term.
Yes. And they've got inappropriate sinus tachycardia. We talked about it a lot after and during COVID because so many people had it during COVID.
During that,
I kind of feel that so many people had it during COVID because everybody had it at the same time.
Yeah.
So therefore they went, I have this. Oh, you have this. Oh, this actually is a thing. Whereas if we all had it at different times, you would be like, eh, it's fine. Yeah. But what happens is, you know, actually when you sit to stand, your heart rate should increase. And some people's increases abnormally, things like that. So they can pass out. Having changes in blood pressure from sitting to standing is perfectly normal. And usually if that happens and you do faint, our general treatment guidelines are usually, again, mostly lifestyle, salt, isotonic drinks. If you feel like you're going to pass out, lie down on the ground. There are medications for it, but we don't like to give it because they, you know, these medications cause hypertension and things like that. But I think, you know, low blood pressure in itself is not really a danger if that's what you've always had. Obviously, if your blood pressure suddenly became low from being high, then that might be something else. But if you're always on the low side, that probably protects you, you know, hopefully
for something. You got something.
Yeah.
It's like that came full circle.
Yeah. What about food? Now, we always, I mean, the sort of the past thoughts have always been, you know, cholesterol is going to lead to heart disease. High fatty food is going to lead to heart disease. What's your thoughts on that?
Disclaimer, not a dietitian.
Yeah.
Not a nutritionist even. But I think from my kind of understanding is that, you know, diet trends always change. At the end of the day, we do know the basics. Too much of anything really is a problem. The heart healthy diet is always kind of the Mediterranean diet, which is fish, lots of leafy vegetables, some legumes, some carbohydrates, but not a lot. So that's kind of the tried and tested diet, like a bit of a pescatarian diet, so to speak. It's very hard for Singaporeans and Asians to do because you go to the hawker center and everything is cheap and good
and fried
and
porky.
Fried, yes, and not fishy.
Yeah.
I am not so strict with my patients. I tell them if 75% of the time you're well behaved. And 25% of the time you're not, that's better than...
I feel like you're kinder. Most people say 80.
Yeah, 75 is gentle. You can tell you're working...
I can tell them 80, but I kind of go by like if you have four meals a day, you know.
Like one of them can be...
Yeah, one of them can be a little cheeky.
Yeah.
But if the rest of them are good, then you're still kind of winning. Because if not, a lot of people end up restricting too much and then they go the complete other direction. Yeah. So... Yeah, but I mean, I don't think there's any magic diet. There was some data on intermittent fasting. There was some data on ketogenic diet. There's a very interesting dietitian here who does healthy keto.
Yes.
Which
honestly,
which honestly basically is kind of like the Atkins pescatarian diet. It's kind of just low carb, but she's actually used that very effectively in patients who are obese and actually decrease their risk. But if you look at what is actually happening, realistically, they're just restricting their calories, losing weight. And
My mother-in-law was in that study, in the pilot study for the healthy keto. So she was one of those individuals, the elderly, you know, 65 plus Singaporeans that was given the meals and all this stuff. And it was wonderful.
Yes.
You know, and I think, you know, healthy keto, it needs to be rebranded to something that isn't, because as soon as people hear keto, they think, oh, no, like I have a heart problem. I can't do keto. And it's like, okay, what can we call it?
Yeah.
I feel like pumped up pescatarian is a way to say it. But it's really great because they got a thumbs up or a thumbs down, depending on if the food fit the framework. You know, so for elderly people, it was fantastic, right? Because it's very clear. Thumbs up, thumbs down. No need to track macros. You just see the little thumb.
Yeah.
And then obviously the meal delivery service was the additional level. It was such a great program. Yeah. So props to that doc.
Yeah.
It was great.
It's amazing. Yeah. And I think that these are, like, at the end of the day, that's what you need. You need people who are really doing things completely differently to actually change, you know, how people see things and how they do things. Because if not, every Singaporean is going to be like, where do I get healthy noodles, you know, for example.
Exactly. Yeah. And until unfortunately the hawker center has like cognac noodles or something, you know, something that's like a true alternative, it's never going
to
change. Yeah.
But even then it's going to be pricier. You know, so then
it doesn't have to be though. Yeah. The government has plenty of money to subsidize whatever they want.
Oh yeah.
Okay, please don't take my podcast off the air.
Okay. Maybe
so,
one day.
Yeah. And I mean, so diet is obviously one huge part of lifestyle, right? But girl, you are standing before me with these guns. Like, we have to talk about exercise. Like exercise is another massive piece of the puzzle.
Yes.
So if we're talking about what exercise moves the needle toward better heart health, talk to us about it.
It is unfortunately cardio exercises.
Womp womp.
Damn it. Cardio exercises are good for cardiology. I suppose I haven't found a good buzzword.
Name checks out.
I haven't found a good buzzword for that. It's actually quite a fair bit of exercise. You need about 150 minutes a week of moderate intensity exercise
yes.
to pass to say that you are gaining a benefit?
Yeah, to get a C.
What's moderate?
Also, there's so many ways to look at it. Yeah. But the way that I feel is the most accessible to most patients, it's just you can talk, but you can't sing, which is what I use for my elderly patients. We want you to be able to talk, be a bit out of breath. But if I asked you to sing, you wouldn't be able to. Mm. You know, if you've got heart rate zones, go ahead and use that. Mm. So if you're using your watch, kind of a zone 2 to zone 3 would be where you would go, giving the bearing in mind that the watch is not super accurate for your heart rate. But yeah, it's usually half an hour, 5 times a week, or you can be like me and choose HIIT or high intensity interval training, because then you get to do half the amount, which is 15 minutes.
Yeah, times it just feels much worse. Yeah, it just feels 10 times harder.
I feel like I do HIIT as well. I actually prefer it. I prefer to just get it over and done with. Amanda, I feel the older we get, the more important protein is. But the thing is, not many women are eating enough.
Absolutely. And you know, protein isn't just for muscles. It helps with hormones, metabolism, staying full longer. And don't just guess, make quality protein a priority.
And that's why we trust the Meat Club. They deliver ethically sourced meats directly to you. You can get grass-fed beef, organic chicken, wild-caught seafood that is nutrient-dense and packed full of the good stuff.
And here's the fun part. We want to see what you're cooking. Show us your creations and tag at the 40s formula and at the Meat Club SG so that you have a chance to win $250 in the Meat Club goodies.
Entries will close on the 5th of June and the winner will be announced on the first episode of season 6. So come on, guys, get cooking. And if you haven't already used the Meat Club, you can. And you can save yourself $12 off by using code TFF12.
Head over to themeatclub.com.sg, get cooking, and who knows, you could even get $250 off your next shop.
I have to say, I've been running and doing a little bit more zone 2 now, and it is still
Dr. G,
very enjoyable.
So off-brand.
It is the high. I tried High Rocks. I did High Rocks.
Did you really?
I did.
And here
I
actually, in Singapore?
Yeah, we actually managed to qualify for Chicago.
Wow.
It's just because no one else did the pro. You know, and we were CrossFit girlies. So we were like, we have to do the heavier weights.
You have to.
So we did them and nobody else did it in our age group, really. And we were like second and we were like, oh, oops. So now we've got to go there and be not embarrassing. So we've been running.
It will be not embarrassing, but you will have to run. That's true fact.
That's what pissed me off High Rocks is the running. I'm going to be honest with you.
It's a running event with some other things.
Yeah, but it's only 1K at a time. Yeah. So it makes it a little
bit
more.
I do like the other things. Like, I love the idea of the other things.
Yeah.
Just the running, I'm like, still 8K. Can I do it?
Just think about 1K at a time. That usually helps.
Because that is what you literally have to think in the, even those laps, right? It's like one lap at a time. And then it's like, okay, I can get 3 and then I keep on running.
So because of that, I've been doing a little bit more running, zone 2. So that's nice. It's nice to get a variety once in a while.
Yeah.
But the HIIT's great, especially if you're busy.
Yeah.
Women are always busy, I feel.
Yep.
You're stuck with all sorts of responsibilities sometimes you did or did not ask for.
Yes. Can I ask you about the HIIT though? So I think this is something that I think women in their 40s get a ton of conflicting evidence about, right? So let's talk about what is HIIT. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what type of exercise qualifies in that category? And then what the dosage of that exercise would be optimally? Yeah. And then, you know, I'll bring up my counterpoint.
So again, very, very debatable, even amongst the cardiac rehabilitation community.
Okay.
People don't quite know, even in the cardiac rehabilitation community, how to administer HIIT in a consistent way. Uh-huh. Because, you know, continuous 30 minutes, everyone knows how to do that. Mm-hmm. Plonk a patient on the treadmill.
Set it.
Look at your heart rate and go, yeah, you've done 30 minutes. But there, you know, anything that kind of increases your RPEs we're going out of 10 here. So 7 and above, 6 to 7 and above, or your heart rate zones are 4 to 5 and you come back down, that is HIIT. So you're doing high intensity at various intervals. People have gone anything from 8 minutes on, 1 minute off, which is literally like what, 2 cycles, to going 4 minutes on, 1 minute off, anything. People have found that regardless of which one you do, they do provide some benefit.
Yeah.
There are studies that have suggested that they increase your VO2 max a little bit quicker, faster, and there's more time saving. But these, if I remember correctly, they're still a little bit controversial because we're not really testing a person's true VO2 max most of the time. We're taking a watch parameter or something along those lines.
Yeah.
So VO2 max seems to be the buzzword right now. Lots of people are talking about it. Yeah. So for people who don't know, could you just explain what that means?
So this is perfect time because I just went for a VO2 max, like a CPET study. So the cardiopulmonary exercise test study thing yesterday or the day before. Okay. So basically we're testing when your body changes from using aerobic to anaerobic exercise. Yeah. And that is kind of the maximum kind of oxygen your body can process. Beyond that is processing carbon dioxide, in my very layman terms of describing it. So it's like your lactate threshold. Yeah. People use it to determine fitness, health and things like that. There are some people who believe that your maximum VO2 max you could ever achieve is genetic and it's not something you can change. I don't want to believe that. If not, why am I running so
much?
Then what is training?
Why?
Are you willing to share your result? Or
No, so I didn't do it. I just watched it. Yeah. I've got mine on my watch, but I don't believe that one.
Yeah. Well, if you ever want to test, my husband and I run an exercise lab. Yeah. So we administer VO2 tests every single day. Yeah. It is one of the joys of my life, as you know. Nothing I hate more than testing myself, but nothing I love more than testing others. Okay, right? Because it's so, first of all, it's a beautiful study in physiology.
Yeah.
Second of all, it's a beautifuler study in psychology.
Yeah.
Because when you, this is what I wanted to bring up with women pushing to zones 4 and 5, right? Or pushing toward your functional maximum. It is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's uncomfortable. I think uncomfortable is putting it lightly.
you get to the point. Well, let's put it this way. It teaches you a lot about yourself in terms of what you can handle and what you're willing to trade off.
Yeah.
You know, so you mentioned, which I agree with, HIIT is excellent for time poor women, right? You don't have a lot of time. Yeah. Do you have 15 to 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Let's hit it. That sounds very appealing. But when you're actually in the zone 5 workout, and you are operating at a heart rate of, you know, like for me, like 176. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievably uncomfortable.
It's so awful.
It almost pushes you to the point of panic because you're like, can I finish? Can I keep on going? Right. So the cortisol and the stress after that, you know, of that intensity of effort can be really difficult, I think, for particular for some women, particularly those who have a lot of chronic stressors in their life.
Yeah.
So this was kind of my point is like, is HIIT for everyone? Are there patients that you would advise choosing different modalities?
It's very personal. Yeah. What you decide to me, it's very crudely. I say, I don't care what you're doing as long as you're doing something and you enjoy it.
I think that's what we also say.
And it's
right?
something you can maintain.
Yeah.
And for me, that might be HIIT because it's faster, it's quicker. I enjoy it. Chronic stress wise, I feel that it's a great place to expend all of the stress.
Yeah.
Especially in CrossFit when you've got some weights to smash around. It's great just being able to drop something and it not break, you know?
Yes. And it's funny you say that about like expressing stress, right? Because so you can probably tell from the way I describe it, zone 5 makes you want to die. The CrossFit Open is literally my worst nightmare. It's my worst nightmare. It's like having to perform at my best over and over and over. Yeah. Like usually I give my best like once a year.
Yeah.
Like I have to give my best 3 times. Anyway, you know, I hear a lot of women say like, oh, you know, I love exercising because it like, you know, I think about my kids and the example I want to set for them or whatever. I actually, when I'm exercising at that level, it's when I do not think about my kids. I don't think about anything. I think about raw survival.
Getting through
without disease. And like, you know, it's one of those things where I think that can be appealing. Like if for women who've never tried it, and I'm not saying CrossFit, I'm just saying that just intensity in of general, exercise. Yeah. Being able to have an outlet like that can be really powerful. Yeah. And so dissuading women away from it, I think is a bit of a disservice, right? Because it's like, hey, it could actually be a solution for you, you know, for women who struggle with lots of stress.
I really resonate with that. I feel like the only time my brain is not thinking of something else is when it's thinking about trying not to die.
Yeah.
Breathing.
Yes. Yeah, which is really.
Because you're just like, oh, I'm taking a breath. I'm okay. I'm not going to die.
It's so true.
I feel like when you're in the gym, you have like two types of people, especially when the countdown's on for that exercise.
Oh my gosh.
You've got the last, I don't know, 10 seconds left, and you've got the people who are like, right, I'm going to fucking smash it and I'm going to go hard. Then you've got the, oh, there's 10 seconds left, I can stop now.
They put it down. Yep, they put the kettlebell down. They're like, that was enough.
They're still trying though. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm the latter.
Everybody's in the same room and I appreciate that. Yeah. And that's what I love about CrossFit too. Like everyone's there together.
Regardless, I mean, everyone is dying in their own way.
Yes.
So I think, you know, whether you look like you're dying less than someone next to you doesn't mean that you are.
Yes.
I do think that, you know, exercise is a very personal choice.
Yeah.
And I think if you've been exercising like all your life, if you played sports growing up, if you've been running, if you were like in a situation where you were dying as a 13-year-old doing a sport and your coach was like, you're not dying, get up and go. You know that you can push yourself.
Yes.
But I've met women who have never exercised all of their life, come to me and gone like, I went for a run with my partner and I was breathing a bit hard and something is wrong with me.
Yeah.
Wow. And usually I'm like, you know, that's exercise.
That's exercise. And yeah, that's exercise.
Yeah.
And also like wink, like you might be out of shape.
Yes. Yes.
It may be an indicator.
But you have to tell them really nicely.
Yes.
But so there's been situations where I've been, had to talk to people to explain to them like, that is what happens when you breathe. And they're like, no, there has to be something wrong with me because everybody else doesn't look as out of breath as I do.
Oh.
But like, oh, sweetie.
Yeah. Go try again. Right. Like it's honestly true. Well, so this actually is a good segue into what I wanted to ask you, like, you know, getting deeper into women and exercise, mm-hmm. right? I have found in my profession that I've seen two major drop-offs, mm-hmm. right? In terms of when women lose their fitness level.
Yeah.
One is pregnancy.
Yep.
One is perimenopause and menopause, yep. the transition.
Yeah.
Those two transitional periods, I feel, are like women really start to kind of lose the script mm-hmm. on their consistency, mm-hmm. on their self-doubt starts yes. to creep in because their bodies are changing.
Yes.
Do you see that as a cardiologist? And then if so, how do you encourage women to keep going through these times?
Even in at this point, you know, my friends, everything like that. But I think my job is to tell them it's okay. It's okay if for a phase in their life, they can't really exercise. We've got, you know, a lot of great health coaches who work with us nowadays who try and find little pockets of time that patients can go and exercise. So they would say you could take the stairs instead of take the elevator. And our general mantra is that something's better than nothing. 5 minutes is better than 0 minutes. So even if that's all you can find, try and do it. Try and do something with your kids if that's possible. But if it's really not possible at this point in your life, then maybe that's okay. Put a pin in it, come back to it later. You know, I mean, I don't want to add additional stress onto a woman who is probably struggling, you know, being a first-time mom or with suddenly two kids from one, you know, so they're chasing everyone around all the time. So I usually tell them that phases in life happen and it happens for everyone. And it's okay if for a period of time you can't do it.
Yeah.
But when you're ready,
get back to it.
Get back to it.
It's funny that you say that, right? Because like, so I'm obviously a huge advocate of exercise in pregnancy, mm-hmm. but having to choose something different. Do you know what I mean? Like you may be able to do CrossFit and then that's great, you know, but you may not.
Yes.
So then being able to choose something better than nothing is still an option. You know, it's like, I totally agree with you there. It's like, fine, you know, know that it's all temporary,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever adjustment that you have to make.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we've talked a lot about cardio, right? Let's talk about strength. Is there any correlation between strength training, muscle development, accumulation of lean mass, and the prevention of heart disease? Are those two things linked?
I think for heart disease prevention, you can always say that if you've got more lean muscle, you know, you're able to keep fat off, especially visceral fat, that's going to improve your cardiovascular outcomes.
Okay.
But I think if you're talking about directly kind of making your heart stronger, better, less the lower likelihood of heart disease, that's probably not something that has come up.
Yeah.
That being said, you know, when we run a cardiac rehab program, we still involve strength and resistance training. We don't say weight training because not everybody likes mm-hmm. weights, but we want to maintain bone density, especially muscle mass, balance and stability. I mean, these are going to all help us as we age. If your heart's healthy, but you fall down when you're going down a flight of stairs, it's still not great.
No, still not great.
Still not great.
Still gonna land you in the hospital.
So have you ever seen someone who is relatively fit, you know, plenty of muscle mass, great bone density, but has
Heart disease.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, because there's a lot of things that are just genetic that we can't control.
Oh, yeah. So like ApoB.
And even then, you know, like just even if you've got high cholesterol in your family, which a lot of Asians and Singaporeans mm-hmm. do, we look really healthy, but all of us have terrible cholesterol.
Yeah.
And some of my patients come up to me and be like, I exercise all my life. Why do I have heart disease? And they feel really upset.
They cheated, right?
Yes.
Like, I did this.
Yes, they had invested and this happens. And I tell them, well, if you didn't do all of this, you would have gotten heart disease 10 years earlier, 5 years earlier. It's not like you could have prevented it completely, but you've delayed it significantly. There is also a very unfortunate side of all these things where overtraining and marathon training and kind of long distance endurance athletes do get calcium in their heart arteries over time. And that's because of just what they think is the higher shear pressures in your arteries. But, you know, that's a whole nother aspect of things.
Yeah, that's interesting. Everyone obviously thinks cardio more. If cardio is good, more cardio is better, but not necessarily.
Not necessarily. There's I can't remember it off the top of my head, but there is like a peak amount that beyond that people do think that it's not good for you. Mm. But it's very hard to define because again, your genetics, you know, how your body is really contributes into whether you develop those things.
You mentioned visceral fat. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about, if you don't mind, what is visceral fat? Like why is this word such a dirty word, right? Mm-hmm. And how does it correlate with heart disease?
So visceral fat is just the fat around your organs. Mm. In terms of heart disease correlation, I believe that it's kind of correlated to your general, you know, your cholesterol levels and everything as well, mm-hmm. And your general health. So I think that kind of correlates to heart disease. Yeah.
Do you guys assess that with patients? Are you able to?
Not often. We still use very crude metrics here, BMI, things like that.
Waist circumference.
So there's waist circumference as well. There's a certain, I can't remember now, if your waist circumference is above a certain number, you are at higher risk of a whole bunch of things.
Yeah, I do have that number just because I just gave a talk on it. So it's for Asians, 80, Asian females, 88. For Caucasian, which is actually quite a big difference.
That's massive difference.
I know. It's a massive difference. Yeah.
But it's also not a lot, really. You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess if you look at our relative sizes, if you look at me versus Jasmine, I think you see the difference.
No, but I mean, you see lots of people who have to be above 80 or 88.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you think, oh, actually, maybe I should be a little bit.
Oh, you're saying like those numbers aren't that big.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're not.
Yeah, they're
what not. What is 10 inches? Like, I know normally what can
divide it by 2.5.
Oh, do that math real quick.
But no, but it's actually not that big. I would say in our practice, and obviously we see self-selected people for weight management. Yeah. So of course, you know, but it's actually very rare that we see an 80 cm or below coming in with a weight problem, right? Like usually if there is an existing weight problem, if BMI is out of normative category, then it's except when I say rare, I can't think of a single patient that was under 80 but had like visceral fat problems and all this stuff.
But I think we use quite crude. We still use BMI. I mean, we don't necessarily want to subject all our patients to all those, you know, fat testing, things like that. Not in a hospital setting, I think. And also because you've got too many different machines, they're not sure if they're validated, all of those things, you know. Yeah. They're useful for if you work out, if you're at the gym, you want to see your fat percentage change. Yeah. But I think in a setting where the patient's or someone's clearly unhealthy or clearly needs to modify risk factors.
Yeah, so I guess you would know, like if someone came in and they had a BMI of 25, but they look like it's muscle, probably not too much of an issue.
Yeah.
But if it's obviously not and they, you can tell.
Yeah, you can tell generally.
Yeah. So talk us through a day as a cardiologist. So like what type of patients are you seeing? Are you seeing patients like, you know, like what urgency? Do you know what I mean? Like, are you like, you know, on the ground saving people's lives? Or talk to us about
that
your day.
Sounds, I mean, that's what the TV would suggest.
Yeah, that is what I'm basing it on that, yes.
I think, at least where I work, I'm quite lucky that we don't rotate on the wards that much. But when we do, it's awful.
Oh.
So meaning that we're really busy. So I actually work out in the west of Singapore, in the hospital there. So when we are on the wards, we go in for the morning, we see up to 40 patients in the morning.
In the morning, just in the morning.
Like in the rounds in the hospital. And then we run a chest pain clinic in the afternoon and our teams do an exit round in the afternoon, which if they've got any issues, they highlight to us. Yeah. And then we're on call the whole week as well.
Oh, wow.
So if there's any issues with patients overnight, someone can't read an ECG, they give us a call. So that's kind of the more exciting part of it.
Exciting
is a word. If people have heart attacks, they come in and we have to whisk them off to the lab, the cath lab, and get their arteries stented. That's generally done by my junior doctors now or the residents. So that was me some time ago. But then, you know, I just have to make the decisions about what's happening with people. We get called for people who, you know, have heart attacks outside of hospital and collapse, whether we need to make some decisions about whether we're going to do an angiogram tonight, you know, things like that. That'll be my busy weeks. But
that sounds busy.
But the other times I run clinics. So we run clinics up 3 to 4 times a week. Mm. I do run a women's heart clinic. So we see women-specific heart diseases and things like that. The rest of the time, we just see everyone. So people with any kind of heart disease or people with just chest pain.
Yeah.
And then I either do some imaging in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So I look at heart scans and things like that. And then I try and go to the gym.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. I was like, so if you guys are hearing what a day in Dr. Jean's life is like, Talk to me about how you do fit exercise in. Like, where does that even slot in for you?
So I'm going to be very honest and admit some days I do get lucky because I do this imaging thing. Mm-hmm. And my boss has been very supportive that if we don't need to be physically in the hospital, yeah. we can work from home. So okay. he's made it nice. So that we can all report scans from home, which has been great for the moms in, yeah. in the team and things yeah. like that. So while they're looking after their kids, I'm at the gym.
Yeah.
So
flexible work arrangements, yes, guys. Works yes. for everybody.
It's the best. You still get your work done. You know, you can choose to get it done whenever. And then that's when I try to hit the gym. Mm. On the days when I'm the wards, it's kind of like a 6 p.m. thing. You're always getting called on the phone. So it's not the best.
Yeah.
But, you know, I try and remember that as long as I'm doing something, it's better than nothing.
I was going to say, this really wise doctor we had on the show said something is better than nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's, again, if you can fit it in with what yeah. you just described, I mean, everyone can do it, right?
What would you say came first, the cardiologist or the CrossFitter?
Definitely the cardiologist, I would say. I mean, I picked up CrossFit when I was in residency at some point, and it was because it was, I could go for an hour class, you know, get all of these random fun things, yeah. learn random new fun things. And I could do it at like 7 p.m. because sometimes the classes would run late, and I could go to work the whole day and then show up there. Someone would tell me what to do. Yes. I just yeah. got to learn something new. I get to like switch off my brain for a while. And obviously, like at that point in time, you know, I wasn't really thinking about where it was going in terms of whether I was ever going to do things more competitive. To be honest, sometimes even now, I don't really see myself as, it's a bit of imposter syndrome when it comes to competing. For okay. sure. For sure.
You're allowed to have it, but you don't need to.
Oh, for sure. I mean,
you're the real deal.
You know, I feel like, you know, you know, most of the time when you see me at the gym and it looks like, you know, everyone's like, oh, you're lifting so much, or you're lifting so heavy. I'm just like, it's just, it felt awful.
Yeah, I was just snatching 80s for reps. Fine, it's fine.
Just like, it just feels awful. So you just feel like you're doing your best, you know, and I've been lucky that that's been good enough to get me to experience things like competing and things like that.
It's amazing that you picked up CrossFit, you know, and it wasn't like, oh, drinking or going to a bar, or, you know, like, and so do you feel like, obviously, going through medical school and doing your residency kind of influenced that journey as well a bit? Or was it purely just a way for you to switch off?
It's a little bit of both. I think, you know, there was definitely a period of time when I was in med school and we were out drinking all the time.
Yeah.
Definitely. You needed one of those things to be a balanced human being. But I think sometime after that, one day I was like, I'm not very fit. And I was doing pole dancing for a while.
Wow.
And I realized that I couldn't go more than 4 minutes without feeling really out of breath. Okay. And I went, this is not okay. Yeah. Like, you know, this, I know this is not okay. So that's when I started to look around for other things to do. I didn't feel like I could run because you'd spend so long on your feet in the hospital that running just felt like
another extension
of
that.
Yeah, like my feet already hurt. I'm just not going to make them hurt more. So I think that was a choice I also made because I felt that if I'm going to have to sit there and tell my patients to go and exercise, I should look it. And now they can't argue because it's like, you know, some of them come in and go like, do you work out? And sometimes I'm like, no, I don't.
Do they see you? Like nowadays no. They would never ask that.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes they do. And I go like, no. And they're like, you're lying. Yeah.
Like, yes. You're lying. Look at the guns.
Obviously. Yeah.
What do you love about CrossFit? Like, so you picked it up through your residency. So you know, you came to it as an adult, let's say, right?
It was somewhat of the gymnastics bits of it, you know, like just flinging yourself around. I mean, I was doing pole dancing, so it's still similar.
That's true. Yeah, you're that's transferable.
Flinging yourself around something. I thought that it had a good kind of balance of cardio and like all these other random skills that you were doing.
Yeah.
And then weightlifting just felt like something to master, something that seemed difficult, seemed hard. But I kind of like challenging myself with something and just seeing whether you can do it or not.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of the thing for me. But, you know, I know it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
But there's so many people nowadays I see doing HIIT because you've got places, so many functional fitness places like Revel, BFT, F45, which are way more friendly for women, I think, to go through.
Yeah, well, that was going to be my question, right? Like, how do you, you know, again, we're not, CrossFit is not sponsoring this podcast, right? But let's just say the sport of functional training, right? So something that's different from maybe what women have been fed in the past, yeah. right? Like, you know, your body pump or your Zumbas and stuff like that, mm-hmm. right? Like, how would you give advice to a woman that was looking to try something like CrossFit or Olympic weightlifting or using a barbell for the first mm-hmm. time, but it just seemed too intimidating? Like, how did you walk in the door that first time?
I actually think I did a trial class somewhere and then thought I didn't like it. I think this was way before, and then didn't come back to it for a few years, and then decided, oh.
For a few years.
Wow. Yeah.
Took a few years off, and then thought, you know what, that was a good time.
I was like, maybe I'll try again at some place different. I think sometimes it's the place and not necessarily the exercise that you're doing. It's wherever you go nowadays, fitness is about community, right? Mm. I'm not going to say it's just CrossFit community, obviously not, because people at all of these gyms, they meet, you know, like-minded people who encourage them. Even if people are just going for a run club, like they're meeting people that they like. And I think that's part of it. Go with a friend, then you won't be so scared. And even if you're, you know, even if they decide not to pursue it later on, at least you've changed a habit. Yeah. But I love the aspect of CrossFit that also kind of encourages women to be strong and not just, you know, the runner's body or this and that, which is fine. No judgment to anyone's body, but you know, everyone's body's different, really.
Yeah. So you always hear sort of CrossFit and paleo together.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever follow the paleo diet? Do you follow the paleo diet? What are your thoughts on it?
No, I like my carbs a little bit too much.
Not for you.
Not for me. I think, you know, you've got all these other things that you shouldn't be doing with red meat. Yeah. You know, people have all of those things down that line as well. But I think if you were really subscribed to the full CrossFit thing back then, it probably, that's what I think they teach in their level one course. Yeah. They tell you to go on paleo and stuff like that. But that for me felt a little bit too much of a one-track solution when there's many, many ways to lose weight. There's many ways to have a healthy diet.
I was strict paleo when I joined CrossFit in 2009. I was also strict CrossFit when I joined CrossFit in 2009. So like in 2009, when I was young and free, I did 4 days a week, every single week, 4 to 5, depending, right? And then I was in run clubs at night to like get my cardio up, and I was strict paleo. And I think I've told you the story. I had a memory, my birthday that year, so it would have been my 26th birthday. Mm-hmm. I remember I would not let up paleo. So for my birthday, I had my little ground beef that I'd been eating, you know, like, so I
but
would
you probably could have had like a paleo cake, you know?
I mean, nowadays there's more stuff.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Like 2009 is the old days. Like we didn't have Pinterest. And like, you know, so I was
gutted there was no Pinterest back then.
Yes. Right. That was like my prime Pinterest date. Now I'm a busy mom. Like, ain't nobody got time. Like, I wouldn't do that if I was paid. But, you know, it's like I was so strict paleo because CrossFit told me to, right? And I was like really trying to be into it and be my best. Looking back now, obviously, in the profession that I do, in the maturity, in the sport, it's one of those things where it's like I don't necessarily think that matches the sport as well as it was purported to.
So I've been, so since I've, you know, been a bit more competitive in CrossFit, we have I do have a nutritionist. She doesn't like me very much because half the time I don't log my food. But I'm like, I've got so many things to do. Yeah. The last thing I'm thinking about doing is logging my food. You know, it's been such a evolution for everyone in CrossFit from going to something very paleo and low carb to going like, you need the carbs to perform at the level that you want to. And then her going, okay, you need to eat this and that. And you actually feeling the difference when you train. And it's been crazy because, you know, growing up, like when I grew up here in Singapore, everybody was just no carbs. Every girl wanted to be tiny and little.
I'm surprised actually that that's a big thing in Singapore. Like I just assumed.
Well, I think being tiny and little is a big thing.
Oh yes, of course, that's
like,
always.
So whatever's the popular path to tiny and littleness.
Yeah. Makes sense. It used to be like, you know, I would not have lunch and go play tennis the whole afternoon and come home, have dinner with no rice. And people were just doing all of these things. And that was the norm because, you know, people just want it to be little. You can imagine if we had someone to actually sit us down when we were kind of school athletes or whatever we were trying to do at that point in time and just been like, maybe you should eat some rice, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so true.
No, I mean, Jasmine knows this. I've been on this like, well, right now, 4 month gains journey. So I'm trying to put on 10 pounds of mass so I can be more competitive at CrossFit, right? Because I always joke like the girls that are my weight in CrossFit are 10 centimeters mm-hmm. shorter than me, mm-hmm. right? It's like, I need to get bigger. And one of the big revelations is how many carbs.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it though.
You saw me do it last night. We went out for pasta last night and I was like, I have to eat this.
You went out for pasta.
Yeah. Sorry, we were at a pasta restaurant. And I was like, I have to finish this bowl or I'll die.
I had a pasta this pasta.
But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, the changing waves of nutrition when it comes to performance, I think has made a huge, it's so much different than it was in 2009.
Yeah, and I see all these little kids. I see all of the younger CrossFitters coming up now and I'm like, it's great for you that you're in a space that this can happen. And then in the US you have the rugby player, Ilona Mara, just being amazing.
Yeah.
And people have, you know, people to look up to who don't look a specific certain way and who are healthy and strong and are confident. Yeah. And, you know, that just builds everybody up into the fact that you can be strong, and being strong is great.
Yeah. It is great.
That's the thing. I think everyone needs to hear this. Like, aim for strong, not skinny. This
is it. Yeah, exactly. Aim for strong. And, you know, my husband's always quick to say, you know, like strength and size are correlated, but not, it doesn't have to, it doesn't always mean that you need to be huger to be stronger, right? You can work on muscular strength aside from hypertrophy, or you can have both. And then also you have performance.
No, because I think hypertrophy, I mean, at least from what I understand, is also very genetic. Yeah. Like how much muscle
you
build.
What your potential,
So.
That's what I blame. Yeah, you know, stupid genes.
So obviously you're not skinny, you're not petite in that sense. Do you find people judge you or say things to you, or are they like a bit intimidated, like a bit scared?
I would not be saying squat to Dr. Jean, okay?
All the time. But I think it's, you know, it's not always ill intentioned. Yeah. I used to always get really sensitive about it.
Yeah.
But I think that's normal. I mean, even now, sometimes if like clothes I have don't fit, I'm still like, maybe I should cut a little bit because I want to put my clothes on, you know, but I think that generally now I feel that, you know, people have come in and said like, oh, your biceps are so big, like guys be intimidated and people would just be like, well, you can get them if you tried.
Yeah. Amazing. I love that.
Yeah. If you worked as hard as I did, right?
I met someone at the gym. She was an ex-fighter and she looked amazing. Like you could see her muscle definition. She just looked amazing. So I asked her, you know, like a few questions and her response was, I need to lose weight. I was like, are you kidding me? Like I don't know, if she lost weight, it would be muscle. Like
that's because she's so lean already.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, continuing to share that and say that even if you don't fully feel it all the time, just so that it's out there and everyone knows. So, but I think, you know, now generally it's positive things because I think being strong and exercising and having a good kind of exercise regime is what people kind of look to or look at nowadays. Yeah. So generally they're good things and I try not to see the bad things too much as I can.
Yeah.
Unless they're really mean, then I'll just be like, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you just take them in a headlock and bring them into submission. Well, so Dr. Jean, we have loved having you here today and you've given us, first of all, a lot of laughs and second of all, a lot of great information. But the last thing that we ask every single guest sitting in this chair, and I'm gonna disclaimer, I know you're not 40 yet, okay? So I know that this is advice coming from a youth, okay, perspective. But what's your 40s formula? What advice would you give women who are in our 40s for kind of how to thrive in this decade?
I always try and put on my doctor hat here because looking at like a patient and what do I say? You know,
if you're looking at some old ladies, what do you say? I mean, what do you say to us?
Firstly, I would say like, you're not old. That's the first thing.
Okay, you're invited back, Dr. Jean.
You are young and really healthy and you've got so much life to live. Be who you want to be at 50 and 60 and 70 and continue to do the things that you love. Then you really need to kind of embrace all of these healthy lifestyle changes as much as you can. But at the same time, you're also 40. You've got all sorts of other responsibilities. And if, you know, you have to do them, you have to do them. So I kind of try and understand, especially for my patients in that age group, that you're really dealing with everything at the same time. Mm-hmm. And but the first thing is that you know, life is just kind of beginning for you as well in a way.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
We're not young.
Yeah, we're not young. We're not old.
I'm gonna say we are young, we're not old.
Yeah. But we still have a lot to do.
Yeah. There's still lots of time. Plenty. To do lots of things.
Yeah. Plenty.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jean.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'll see you again and thank you very much for being on the show.
It was great. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's be real. Perimenopause is a game changer. One day you're cruising along and the next your body puts a spanner in the works. Sometimes symptoms feel manageable, others, well, let's just say we have to breathe through those.
And I'm not there quite yet, but the research shows that staying strong, physically and mentally, makes a world of difference.
That's why Great created Menopause Mojo by Great Moves. It's a fitness program designed just for this stage of life. It helps with pelvic strength, breathing exercises, and muscle training, everything you need right now.
And we've got a special deal just for you, listeners of the 40s Formula. Use code TFFSPECIAL at checkout to get your first class for only $50.
Or go all out and save 33% off a 5-session starter pack.
Your body's changing, but you're still you, and you deserve to feel great. Let's get moving with Great.
Guys, you know we love coffee. And if you want to show us some love, you know you can always get us one.
Just visit buymeacoffee.com/the40s formula.
Cheers.
Before we go, please remember to hit subscribe and take a moment to support the 40s Formula by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
Your reviews will help us to reach more people and allow us to continue to bring valuable content. It should only take a moment, and it's a free way for you to support the show.
You can also stay updated with the 40s Formula by following us on Instagram at the 40s Formula, all one word. We share behind-the-scenes insights, episode updates, and much more, so please be sure to hit that follow button.
We appreciate your time and support. Thank you for being part of this community. And we'll be back next week for more empowering conversations with inspiring guests.
Bye. Bye.
Yeah.
What's a sticky grip?
It's the, it, basically, it sticks your hand to the bar.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
the problem
okay.
with this, though, have you ever had grip lock? Did you ever use sticky
no,
grips?
I don't, I death grip. Yeah. Like, I don't put my thumbs around. They have like these grips that are now developed so that you barely even need to grip the bar. You just basically hang on by your wrist.
Yeah.
But it actually makes people perform a lot better because you don't worry about grip strength and stuff.
Yeah.
I do kind of get bruises from the frog grips.
I do too.
Because I keep, like, it's so tight, but at the same time, it's better than people flying off.
Yes.
So we finally had things that said semifinals on it, and it was like a good gathering of like the Asian CrossFit community. And then now they've gone like, oh, we're not going to have that anymore in this capacity. So you're actually taking away a lot of people's like first level goals. Yeah. So I think that's problematic. It makes people not want to join.
Like either you're elite level and you go straight to the games or there's no like in between for your strong amateur.
Me.
Yeah. Dr. Jean.